Okay, Wednesday morning, what is it, May 13th, and we're doing SN1, SN2, E1, E2 problems again, or more problems, and looking to see where we left off. Let's do... What do we want to do? Let's do this problem. And I know that Linnea has been doing a lot of these problems too, because I gave her the set to work from. But if we do the same problem a couple of times, we may walk through it in a different sort of way. And so maybe it's not so bad to hit some of these same problems. And let's see if we can make this a little bit more interactive. If you guys have your chats up, you can give me an idea of what you think this problem is in terms of the problem type. And I could even make it maybe a little bit more clear in terms of problem type if I rewrite it. Usually we don't quite do it this way, but we'll put aqueous down there. So it could be written either one of these ways. Usually when we have an acid, if it's not a nucleophile, if it's just an acid or a reagent to accomplish the chemical reaction, we usually like to take and put that reagent up on top. And so this is an acid. Maybe we'll leave it this way. The other way makes it look like a sulfolysis problem. So what type of problem does this look like? I mean, if we sort of break it down, we've got a tertiary substrate. We've got a problem in the leaving group. There's no leaving group currently. The hydroxide ion coming off is not a good leaving group. I'd go so far to say as it's not a leaving group at all. But once it gets protonated, it can become a leaving group. And so that's the point of the acid. And so up here, what we have is we have acid in the chemical reaction. We've got high heat. No indication of what the solvent is, but we've got this aqueous component here. So we're assuming that the solvent is water. Or at least is aqueous in there. And in terms of nucleophile, I'm not seeing a clear nucleophile in this. So usually that tends to be then sort of a sulfolysis reaction, although the solvent being water would just be replacement of hydroxide by hydroxide. And so that doesn't seem like a decent option. So what is all of this sort of pointing towards? Any ideas or any sort of feel what this reaction is looking like? When you don't have a good leaving group, one of the things that you can do is you can think about moving the reaction forward. By taking and kicking that reaction off by protonating the hydroxyl group. Once you protonate the hydroxyl group, now you have a leaving group. And being on a tertiary center, now that's a pretty good leaving group because it leaves you with a tertiary carbocation. So we have the tertiary carbocation, and then what do we feel like is going to happen now? Now we've got no good incoming nucleophile. So what's looking like the major product here? Missing a carbon, did I lose one? Oh, maybe I did. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah, we'll put one more out on the tail end. Thank you. Elimination. Yeah, I think that's the only real, the real key here is that once we've got the carbocation formation and we know that we're into carbocation formation, then we're either into SM1 or we're into E1. And because we have no clear incoming nucleophile, that really only leaves the elimination reaction. So once we went through the carbocation formation, then we were really into E1 territory. And so now what we've got to do is we've got to figure out the E1 product. So working from this to figure out the E1 product, there are a couple of protons that we can pull. We can call this one HA. And then we have the protons that are over here that we can call HB. And there are 3 HAs, actually 6 HAs. And there are 2 HBs. And we can look at pulling each one of those protons in turn and what comes from pulling each one of those protons. So we'll take and we'll say minus HA. So we'll have a base come in, pull the proton, kick the electrons in to make the double bond. That's going to give me, based on the way that I've drawn it now, that's going to give me that product. And if I pull HB and a base comes in and this is minus HB, and I pull that proton and kick the electrons in, that's going to give me a double bond in that orientation. And so I've got two products that have come out of this. The first product I can draw going down here, fuzzy. And the second product. So those are my two products that came out of this. And which one of these is major and which one of these are minor? They're both E1 products. Let's call this guy A and that guy B. HB, because it ends up more substituted. Good, because we're at high heat. High heat usually indicates that this is going to be the thermodynamic. And the thermo product is the one that is the more substituted product. And so I would agree that A is going to be major in being the more substituted product in that case. B being less substituted would be minor. And so those are our E1 products. Good, let's try another one. Let's take and do this one. Oh, I needed a solvent in here. We'll put THF. Okay, what about this problem? Any sort of initial impressions? So we've got a secondary, but this is a benzyl bromide. Remember that benzyl substrates are oftentimes good SN2 substrates. So if we took that magic sheet and we looked at that magic sheet, thinking about where I have that. Nope. 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 Chemed. Okay, so on the magic sheet, maybe I want to bring this in. That when we look at the SN2 reaction, we've got benzyl is approximately equal to allele, and that those are better, even faster than a methyl or a primary, so that these benzyl substrates are really good SN2 substrates. So that's that substrate. And Katrina, you're saying bulky base, that's good. You've picked that out. That's an important component here, that LDA. This is our bulky base, or one of our bulky bases. So that LDA molecule, when we look at it, those have the two really big isopropyl groups, the nitrogen with the negative charge and the lithium with the positive charge, and that is a bulky base. Which means that it's in the name, that this only functions as a base, cannot function or does not function as a nucleophile. So when we're looking at the different chemical reactions, because this can only function as a base, that means that I'm into elimination reactions. So that means that SN1, these guys are off the table because this guy is not nucleophilic. And so that means that I'm really looking at E2 reactions. We could put in E1 in there, but I think that we're going to see that normally with a bromide like this and a bulky base, that these tend to go E2 reactions. And so we've got a really cold temperature. We're in a polar aprotic solvent. The protic apolar solvent is telling me that I'm not going to get carbocation formation. So usually within these don't support carbocations. And because those don't support carbocations, that eliminates the E1 reaction. So I'm really into an E2 reaction with the LDA. So now I've got to find a proton, an appropriate proton to pull in order to do the E2 reaction. So I go back to the substrate and look at that substrate. And find protons to pull. So I have three protons that are out here. And there is a proton that is here. And then the only other protons are on the aromatic ring, but those are all on sp2 hybridized carbons. So there's only one proton to actually pull in this. So the base comes in, the LDA comes in and pulls the proton. You can draw it as LDA. You can leave it just as base. We pull the proton, the electrons come in, we kick out the leaving group. And we get a single product that comes out of this. And that's my E2 product that comes out of it. And there's no E or Z, so there's no stereochemistry to consider because that's a terminal double bond. So with a terminal double bond, there's no E or Z, so we don't have to worry about stereochemistry or figuring out the stereochemistry. So only one product that comes out of this. And that was an E2 reaction that came out of it. All right, let's try another one. Let's do this. Okay, so what have we got going on in this one? Well, you guys are quiet. You just want me to do all the work here. I see how it is. I see how this is working. All right. So this is a tertiary substrate. It is benzyl. But as we go to tertiary benzyl, SN2s become much less likely at a tertiary. The bromide is the leaving group. Good. So bromine is the leaving group. So Br- is my leaving group. What about my base or nucleophile? What is my base or nucleophile here? And what is this thing? There goes Finley. He's found the tree trimmers. He's going to protect the homestead. Sodium hydride. When we look at this, this equals H minus. This is sodium hydride. And sodium hydride, the hydride itself is a small hard anion. It's a good nucleophile, but it can also be a good base. It just depends upon how we're actually using it. I'm trying to close my office door. Finn, you're too loud, my friend. And so what we see with that guy is that it can serve to function as a base. And as a base, it's actually kind of a nice base. One of the things that it does is that when it pulls a proton, so if we watch H minus pull a proton, let's say that there's an acidic proton nearby, it picks it up and it makes H2. Which is a gas, which leaves the reaction vessel. So this is a base that as it pulls a proton, forms hydrogen gas and leaves the reaction vessel. And while we're looking at everything that's going on here, our solvent is THF, tetrahydrofuran. The structure of that is a five-membered ring system with the oxygen in it. So this is polar, but aprotic. And so all of these different things, what the things are sort of pointing towards is that when we look at this tertiary group over here, the tertiary group is sort of pointing me towards either SN1 or E1 because of its tertiary nature. So that's looking at those types of things. We could also put in here E2. That's fair enough too, because when we go and we look at the magic sheet, what we see is that when I have a tertiary substrate, that tertiary substrates here are good for E2, they're good for E1, they're good for SN1. So all of those things are true. So we'll leave that there. My bromide is a leaving group. It's a pretty good leaving group. So this is a good leaving group, which again, the leaving group doesn't always promote us towards any particular reaction. The better the leaving group, the better or the faster it is for all of those. Katrina E1 because of the base. The only thing that I would say about E1 is that when we go and we look at the solvent that we're in, when we look at this polar aprotic, that doesn't support carbocation formation very well. That we would generally like to see a polar protic solvent in order to get carbocation formation, in order to get to E1. So that what we see sort of here is that with the polar aprotic, we're generally looking at no carbocation formation because of the polar aprotic nature. It doesn't totally exclude it, but it knocks it out to a degree. And the fact that the lower temperature, we're sort of at room temperature, so that's not a real high temperature, it's not a real low temperature. But because of the polar aprotic nature of this, and the sodium hydride, which tends to be a good base, I sort of cross off the SN1 and the E1 and lean a little bit more towards E2 in that nature, with the hydride pulling the proton. And I'm saying that because of the no carbocation, because of the polar aprotic solvent nature here. And so if I take this substrate and look at pulling the proton or pulling a proton and kicking out the bromide, then all my protons are kind of equivalent. So my H minus can come in here and I can pull a proton, kick the electrons in, kick out the bromide, and irregardless of which proton I pull, I get the same or equivalent product coming out of this. And sodium bromide would be the other byproduct, and H gas, hydrogen gas that comes off. And so out of this reaction, what we see is primarily an E2. And that would be the product that we would expect out of that. Also, there's another component here that we say, and that is that oftentimes elimination reactions, so elimination reactions, activation energy lowered by conjugation. In product. So look at this too. When we do an elimination reaction, the elimination reactions are endothermic. And that means that the transition state resembles the product. And so if we're doing an elimination reaction and I have some leaving group on here, and then we go and we produce the product like this, the transition state is related to the product. So when I'm looking at undergoing this chemical reaction as an E2 reaction, and the bromide is getting kicked out, and I have some base that is pulling the proton and generating the double bond, this is highly conjugated. The double bond is in conjugation with the aromatic ring system. All of the carbons are sp2 hybridized. That high conjugation for that product lowers the stability of the product, makes the product more stable, lowers the activation energy for its formation, and makes that product even faster to form. So looking at conjugation or possible conjugation within an E2 or E1 lowers the activation energy for that product as well. So something to be aware of in terms of conjugation. And how that product is highly conjugated, which leads towards the elimination product. All right, let's do Let's see, what do I want to do? Oh, these are all good. Keep trying to see if there's something that's more exciting than something else. Let's do this one. Okay. So what's going on in this problem? What sort of substrate do we have? Primary, secondary, tertiary, what do we think? Secondary, good. It is indeed a secondary substrate. Remember that the way that we're doing that is that we're looking at the carbon that the leaving group is connected to, and then we're asking how many other carbons are connected to that leaving group or to that carbon that the leaving group is on, and that's what's telling us that that is secondary center. So that's a secondary alkyl halide. Chloride is the leaving group, so the leaving group equals chloride. We have a solvent, a temp, and a nucleophile or a base. So we'll just identify all these things out. And sometimes I make a list like this. Sometimes I just write on the problem itself. App is freezing up more than normal. I feel like in this format, it's a little bit better if I make a list than writing on everything, because the problem gets fairly tight and then it gets hard to see what the actual problem is. So my solvent is methanol. Protic or aprotic? It's polar, but is it protic or aprotic? Trying to get you guys just to think through these things. Protic, good. So this is protic, and these protic solvents will oftentimes promote carbocation formation. So we've got to think carbocation formation is a possibility. 60 degrees in terms of methanol, the boiling point of methanol is 68, so we're close to the boiling point of methanol, which means that this is relatively high. And nucleophile or base, we've got potassium, which is the cation, and bicarbonate, CO3-. This is the anion. And so that thing there doesn't look much like a nucleophile. In fact, bicarbonate is something that we use as a base most of the time. So this is looking more like a base. And as I say base, that's indicating that we're looking at elimination reactions. And if we say E1 or E2, and we think carbocation formation, high heat, this is sort of seeming more in the realm of E1 reaction. So if we think E1 reaction, then we've got to go through an E1 reaction mechanism. And that means some breaking down of what's going on with this problem. So let's take this problem and we'll take the substrate. And now that we've identified a mechanism, we'll see what we can have that comes out of this. So in an E1 mechanism, we will push out the leaving group. Once the leaving group gets kicked out, we get the carbocation formation. With carbocation formation, the first thing to do is to look and see, are there any hydride shifts or any alkyl shifts that can occur with this substrate? And Katrina, yes, you got a 1-2 alkyl shift that can wind up occurring. So one of the things that we have here is a group that can migrate. And if that group migrates, so we'll say 1-2 alkyl shift, we'll redraw the new carbocation. That takes me from a secondary carbocation to a tertiary carbocation. And remember that we only have one shift that occurs. So we could look at alkyl shifts, we could look at hydride shifts, but there's no hydride shifts which are going to take me to a more stable substrate. So I don't see a hydride shift coming out of this. I see this tertiary carbocation formation. And then what we look at is all the different products that can form from both of these carbocations now. So we want to look at both the original carbocation and we want to look at the tertiary carbocation. Whatever product is going to be major is going to come from this one. This one is going to produce a minor product, but we want to make sure that we track and catch all of those. So the protons that we are looking at, we have two protons here that we can pull. We can call those HA. We have a proton which is out here. We can call this HB. There is a proton which is over here. We can call HC. And there's one more set of protons. These are HD. So we have HA, HB, HC, and HD, all that can be pulled to make products. So pulling HA minus HA leads to a product that is going to be a minor product that will have the double bond in that position. So this one's minor. Pulling HB, as we pull HB, that's going to give us a product that is going to dump the electrons in between the two methyl groups. So the electrons will go there. Pulling HC, now what we get is the loss of the stereocenter. And the double bond in that location. And pulling HD, that's going to give me the double bond at the top of the molecule. Stereocenter still intact. Okay, one of these is major that I'm looking at, and I've got to decide which one of these is major. One way to do that is to look at the substitution pattern and to say, well, what is the substitution pattern that is occurring here? So substitution pattern, when I look at it, this is a 1, 2, 3, 4. That's a tetrasubstituted. The one here is only disubstituted. And HC, when I pull it, HC is 1, 2, 3, 4. This one is also tetrasubstituted. But it's also conjugated. Notice the conjugation in the ring system. So the conjugation that I'm looking at is the conjugation that is here. Maybe that doesn't highlight it so well. Let's choose something else to highlight it. Nope, that buries it. Too bright. Maybe that helps a little bit. There's the conjugation that we're seeing within that. So HC, because it creates more conjugation. Yes, exactly. It's the conjugated one that we're looking at that is equally substituted. It's tetrasubstituted, but more conjugated. That would be the one that I would assume would be the major product, and the others would all be minor. So the disubstituted would be minor. The tetrasubstituted would be minor. Finley, come on, buddy. He just can't stand anybody near his house. All right, so we've got four different products that come out of this. They're all E1s. And we're going for the major one that has the conjugation in it. So if we go back up and we draw out the four different products, we have our major product. Oops, that's not a stereo center anymore. I'm trying to cram them all in here, so I know I'm going to have to write small in order to fit each one in. We have then our other products that are in here. Plus the last one that came before the ring shift, or not the ring shift, but before the alkyl shift. And this one is major. And the rest of these are all minor. And that would be my expectation. Okay. Let's take a look at another one. How are we doing so far? Is everybody's keeping up? Am I going too fast? Am I going too slow? How are we sort of feeling? Everything's okay. All right. You guys aren't even giving me thumbs up anymore. There we go. Thanks, Caden. A token thumbs up. All right. Let's do... Let's do this one. Oh, Finley. Hopefully they're not going to be trimming that tree forever. We're doing sodium methoxide. This is being done in methanol. Minus 30 degrees C. Okay, so this substrate is unique. And actually, while we say it's unique, it's fairly common to see these types of substrates. This is what's called an epoxide. Sometimes these are called oxirenes. So an epoxide or an oxirene, epoxide, there we go. Oxirane is the formal name of the three-membered ring system that has an oxygen in it, but these are also most frequently called epoxides. And as epoxides, these epoxides tend to be good leaving groups, a three-membered ring with an oxygen in it. So there's an epoxide, and this is a substituted epoxide. And epoxides are unique in that as a leaving group, they can break from either side. So when we look at the epoxide, we can think of the oxygen as the leaving group, but the oxygen as a leaving group is attached to both sides. And so we have to sort of consider both sides into this. When we look at an epoxide like the one that is here, that has a stereo center in it, there are two sides to the epoxide. And so we can look at either the leaving group coming off and breaking off of this side. And if it breaks off of that side, then what I wind up getting is looking at this as a secondary leaving group. If it breaks from the other side, then it looks like a primary leaving group. And so it's got two different sides to it to consider. when looking at these. And we have to sort of figure out which side is the appropriate side to focus on. And so, and this is not to say that they're going to generate a carbocation necessarily. They can generate carbocations, so that's a possibility. But I was trying to show you the nature of both sides. And so if I look at it as a leaving group that can come from either side, then as a leaving group coming from either side, this has a primary side and it has a secondary side. And so in terms of leaving group, I have both a primary and a secondary leaving group to consider. Okay, along with that, methoxide ion, this is a good nucleophile, but it's also a good base. And so in that I have a good nucleophile and a good base, I could be going either E2 or I could be going SN2. In terms of a good nucleophile or a good base. The reason I didn't consider SN1 or E1 happens to be because of the cold temperature that's here and the fact that if this guy were to pop off, it would have to pop off as an anion. And that anion we know is like hydroxide and is not a real good leaving group in that sense as a hydroxide. So the cold temp and the leaving group are sort of taking SN1 and E1 off the table. So I'm sort of crossing them both off because of the cold temp and the leaving group, which is leaving me in E2 or SN2 territory. And I've got to decide whether the E2 or the SN2 is more likely. So how do I decide whether the E2 or the SN2 is more likely? What is going to tip the scales here? Or what is it generally that I look at that tips the scales? If I go and look back at the magic sheet and I look between SN2 and E2 and I'm trying to think, okay, what tips the scale here? SN2, temperature low. E2, temperature high. SN2, the primaries are faster than secondaries. In E2, secondaries are faster than primaries. So I have a leaving group here that is both. I have a leaving group that is primary, and I have a leaving group that is secondary, but I'm under low temperature. And I think both the primary leaving group and the low temperature sort of tip the balance towards SN2 in terms of this guy. So when I look at this, I'll go back to the substrate. It's the low temp. Low temp, which leans towards substitution. And the fact that I have a primary substrate, which also leans towards SN2 with a good nucleophile. All of that leaning towards SN2, but I'm also have a strong E2. So I'm going to get a major and a minor that's going to come out of this. The major is going to be the SN2. The minor is the E2. And I need to draw both, or this question would have asked for the major and minor product. So I need to go through and do an SN2 mechanism. And then I need to look at the E2 mechanism and see what could come out E2 wise and what would happen there. All right, so let's take the substrate. Let's do the SN2 first. So for an SN2, remember we have the primary and the secondary. The nucleophile, which is the methoxide ion, is going to come in and attack the primary center. The leaving group is going to leave by breaking this bond, kicking the electrons up onto the oxygen, and then there will be a subsequent protonation step after that guy leaves. So I have the incoming nucleophile, OCH3. I have the O minus and the proton, and the stereocenter is protected and is unchanged because the reaction didn't happen at the stereocenter. The reaction happened next to the stereocenter. And then a subsequent protonation from the methanol that's in solution, leading me to my final product, which is the alcohol that now has the methoxy group substituted on it. So we get OH, we get H, and I almost lost methyl there. And so that is the major product that we would expect that comes out of that. The E2 product, when we look at the E2 product, now I need to consider that primary versus secondary position again, and I need to look for protons that can be pulled in order to generate the E2 reaction. So I need to find a proton that is alpha to the leaving group. And this time we're going to focus more on the secondary center because that's going to give us the more substituted position. So there are two protons. We'll call HA and HB. Let's talk about pulling HB first, and then we'll talk about pulling HA. The methoxide ion can pull the proton, kicking the electrons in and kicking out the leaving group so that the leaving group leaves. The leaving group leaving with epoxides is initially confusing to students because the epoxide never fully leaves. The oxygen still stays attached, and we end up with an alcohol in the final product. So you have to remember that your leaving group is attached to two positions in the molecule, and only one side of it is breaking. So when that happens, we end up with the double bond there. Proton that was HA still attached. Proton that, the oxygen that came off is there. We've now generated methanol. And like in the problem above, we have a protonation step where the proton is taken from methanol. And we end up with what is called an allylic alcohol. Okay, I can't take Finley anymore. He's killing me. I'm going to go give them a little time out. And I will be right back. Hang in there. Think about questions in terms of this problem, because this one should generate some questions. I'll be right back. Okay, I feel sort of doubly bad or triply bad there. Number one, I know you guys are probably gonna wanna go back and rewatch this video at some point since we're doing so many problems. And that to go back and rewatch it with the dog barking is gonna be excruciating, so I apologize for that. Number two, I feel terrible that I just had to throw my dogs in their crates in order to try to get them to stop barking a little bit. So anyway, questions on what's going on here. We have a major and we have a minor product that are coming out of this reaction. And so let's take this guy. And we'll draw in those major and minor products. So the major product had the double bond in this position. Nope, that's not a double bond. What did I do? The major had the substitution, the SN2. Stereocenter intact. That was my SN2. That was major. And I had an elimination product. That was minor. And that's really coming about because of the low heat. The primary substrate, the good nucleophile, all of that leading towards, okay, why doesn't it take HA? Yeah, let's go back and look at HA. HA looks like a good proton to pull. If we try to pull HA, let's say that the base comes in and tries to pull that. Where do the electrons go? The electrons go into here, breaking this bond and kicking out that, such that what it looks like you're trying to create is a double bond here with an oxygen and an O minus in this position. That's what it looks like you're trying to create. But remember that in an E2, that the requirement in an E2 is that the proton be pulled anti to the leaving group. And that in pulling that proton anti to the leaving group, what we are doing is we are taking the electrons that are in this bond and dumping them into the antibonding orbital. Let's just do this in black. Dumping them into the antibonding orbital, which resides here. So this is my sigma star, and the electrons are being dumped into the sigma star in order to kick out the leaving group or break the leaving group and disrupt the leaving group. And that means that they must be anti to one another. For the E2 reaction. If we take a look at the epoxide and we draw the epoxide from this perspective, what we see with the epoxide is that the proton that we are attempting to pull, there's my oxygen, there's HA, there's another group that comes off of here, and on the backside, I have two protons, which aren't really in that position. The protons are really stuck here and stuck here. And this guy comes back in and makes the double bond, not the double bond, makes the epoxide, makes the three-membered ring system. And that three-membered ring system is stuck more or less in a eclipsed conformation. That epoxides, when I look at them, although I've drawn it this way with that forward and this guy back, that when I look at that, there is a proton back and a proton forward. And so if I just sort of reorganize this bond and think of this bond here as being more of a straight bond, then this bond is coming out towards me. And the epoxide is really trapped almost like a double bond in a flat sort of orientation where the hydrogens are eclipsed and there's no rotation because of the three-membered ring system. So trying to pull HA, HA is not anti to my leaving group. When I look at where my leaving group is, the bond that I would want to break is that bond. And the bond that I am trying to pull to break it is that bond. And they're not anti to one another. HA is not anti to a leaving group. So that means that I can't pull HA. So this just doesn't happen. The geometry is not correct. So it doesn't allow the HA proton to be able to be pulled in order to do the E2 reaction because it's just not in the right geometry. It's just not anti, and we can see that within the Newman projection. So whenever we look at epoxides and we take an epoxide and it's a terminal epoxide like this, then the only protons that are viable are these protons out here for E2. For E2, it is only these guys that can be pulled. This proton here is off limits. Does that sort of help in visualizing it? See what's going on there? Just for E2, yeah, that when we're looking at pulling those protons, that the only time that I'm not able to pull those protons is in an E2 reaction with epoxides. So epoxides don't only go E2. Epoxides can go E1. Epoxides can go SN2. Epoxides can go SN1. Epoxides can go the full range of reactions that all the other substrates can go. It's just that when I look at E2, only those protons that are in that position can be pulled for the E2 reaction. And that a proton that is, these protons are also off limit. So these protons that are out here, they can't be anti either. So those protons are also off limits. It's only protons that are off the epoxide, one step away from the epoxide, that can be pulled in order to do the E2 reaction. Okay, so watch for epoxides. Epoxides become a fairly strong component within the curriculum, particularly second semester. We look at doing a lot of epoxides and using a lot of epoxides in synthesis. They're just very versatile types of substrates. One reason that they're so versatile is because of the product that they create, that when you go through and do an E2 on them, the E2 product gives you a double bond and a hydroxyl. It gives you two functional groups that you can use to either take the hydroxyl group on to do something else, or you can react the double bond with to do something else. And in an SN2, they give you an incoming nucleophile plus a remaining hydroxyl that we can do other things with. So they give you bifunctional molecules that allow you to then work on two parts of the molecule later on towards synthesis. And so they're very versatile substrates because of that. And you can do all kinds of things with them. So something to watch out for are the epoxides. Okay, what else is good here? Let's do this next one. Oh, this was not supposed to be, this was supposed to be OMS. We'll get to what that is. Potassium tert butoxide in tertiary butanol, 40 degrees C. Okay, OMS. This equals the mesylate. And as a mesylate, this is a good leaving group. So it's like the tosylate in that way, in that this is a good leaving group. Okay, so what do we see here? What about substrate? Secondary and bulky base, good. Secondary substrate, bulky base. What about that temp? Is that a high or low temp? It's higher than room temp. Let's call it sort of medium to high. All right, so secondary substrate, bulky base, medium to high temperature, good leaving group. High versus low depends on relative to the leaving group. Remember that when we look at the leaving group, that we sort of had these two different conditions. High versus low. Temperature is relative to the leaving group and the solvent to a degree. So as the leaving group is a good leaving group, that good leaving group we're saying is that this is sort of a big ball on a weak string, and that a poor leaving group is like a small ball on a really strong string. And that if we hit this too hard as we turn up the temperature, then the ball just breaks and comes off. And so our cutoffs that we had set for that, we were sort of using high was anything greater than 25, and low was something that was less than 25. Actually, maybe we should do that. High and low. And then when the leaving group was a poor leaving group, high is generally considered to be refluxing or something over 100, whereas low might be, you know, something less than 100. So it's relative to what the leaving group is. So we go back and we think about our leaving group. What is our leaving group? We've got a really good leaving group. So in that this is a really good leaving group, that really good leaving group is translating into 40 being on the high side. I hope that sort of helps. That's the way that I, or that's where I'm pulling that cutoff from or thinking about that. So this is a relatively high temperature. And when I take into account bulky base, secondary substrate, relatively high temperature, what are we leaning towards in terms of the four reactions? E2, good. Yeah. Okay, so this is an E2 reaction. Now we got to do an E2 mechanism. So when we have an E2, once we decide on the mechanism, now we've got to go through and work that out. Okay. In an E2, when we are in a substrate like this, that is a six-membered ring system, the antiprotons, we can consider protons which are going to be in these two locations, and we can consider the proton which is in this position over here. So normally I would call both of these HA, But I'm going to call one HA, one HB, and this one HC over here. And the reason I'm calling one HA and one HB is because one of these is on the top side of the molecule and the other is on the bottom side of the molecule. And in order to figure out, let's see, are there other scenarios where a bulky base could be for another reaction other than E2, where a bulky base goes for something other than E2? No, bulky base is generally considered or generally thinking or pointing towards an E2 reaction. The bulky base, under the right conditions, that take fairly extraordinary conditions, can do substitution. If it's on a primary substrate, you can get some substitution on a primary substrate. But most of the time, because of the bulky nature of that, the E2 is going to become the major. And those bulky bases are generally such strong bases that they don't give time for carbocation formation. So you're generally not getting E1 or SN1 in terms of those bulky bases. So it's generally SN2, or E2 that we're looking at when, once we see the bulky base. So you identify the bulky base, you're pretty much already in E2 territory. Okay, but what we need to do with this substrate is we need to go into six-membered ring conformations and think about what these conformations look like. So we have the OMS leaving group. We have a methyl group, which is down in that position, and an isopropyl group, which is in that orientation. The hydrogens that we're looking at, this is HC, and then there is HA and HB. So we have those different groups there. And in the other conformation for that molecule, which might be important to look at. In the other conformation, we have the OMS group up. We have the isopropanol group in the equatorial orientation. The methyl is now axial on that backside. The hydrogen HC is there, HA and HB. Okay, now here's my leaving group in an equatorial orientation. Which protons are anti to that leaving group? So if I wanted to look at the different protons, HA, B, and C, are any of those protons anti to that leaving group in the orientation where that leaving group is in an equatorial orientation? Let me look at the other one as well. Here's my leaving group in an axial orientation. And when I look at that in the axial orientation, there are two groups which are anti to it. There is HB, which is anti to it, and the methyl group, which is anti to it. That only a leaving group on a six-membered ring system, this is a key point, on a six-membered ring system, in the axial orientation, or actually, let's say it this way. A six-membered ring system, the leaving group must be axial to have a anti-hydrogen. Leaving group cannot be equatorial. and go E2. And that's because there's no anti-hydrogen in the equatorial orientation. So remember that the proton has to be pulled anti to the leaving group. And because the proton has to be pulled anti to the leaving group, this is the only conformation where there's an anti-hydrogen. And the base can now come in, that bulky base, potassium tert-butoxide. Pull the proton. Electrons kick in and kick out the leaving group. So it's only in that orientation that the reaction actually proceeds. The other conformation, there's no reaction. So looking at this guy, as I pull that proton, that means that the product that forms is where I get the double bond here. HC is still intact. The methyl group is still there. This group is in its orientation, and that's my product. And when I draw that back in a flat orientation, I get that bond there, the methyl group down, and this group still in its orientation, and this is the only product. So while it looked like there was a proton that I could pull that would be more substituted, this is the only E2 product that I'm able to get out of this. And so when I look at the chemical reaction, if I go back and grab that overall chemical reaction, while this reaction looks like I should get two products. One product should be this one. And the other product looks like it should be this one. And this one on the right is trisubstituted. And on the left, we are disubstituted. And so with that high heat, generally you want to go for the more substituted product. However, because of the restrictions in the way that an antiproton must be pulled, and the six-membered ring conformations, and the only way to get the antiproton, what we find is that the product on the right cannot be formed. So this is not formed, or what we say is not observed. And so we don't get this product. And that's because of the six-membered ring conformation. And so the other one, even though it's less stable, this is the only product. That is formed. And again, that's because of the restriction in the six-membered ring conformation state. Okay, how did that go? So we're learning, and I know there's a lot of lessons in here to learn because, you know, we've got epoxides, which are some unique substrates. We've got six-membered ring systems. We've got four different reactions. We've got lots and lots of different bases now and nucleophiles and temperatures. And but it's in the aggregate of bringing them all together and seeing lots of them that start to really help out. What's the next one I want to do? Let's try Huh. I had a relative rate worksheet someplace. I need to find that relative rate worksheet. I've got another thing to send out to you guys someplace. I'll have to find it. It's just giving me an idea, or I need to write another problem set that can help a lot. I wonder where that problem set went to. Okay, two reactions, looking at two reactions together. Both of these reactions are E2 reactions. But what I want to do is I want to make some comparisons between these two E2 reactions. So the substrate is tertiary and substrate is identical in both cases. The difference between them is that I've got a bulky base in the bottom one, and I've got a small base in the top one. So it's a bulky base versus a small base. Temperatures are different, but temperatures are different because of reactivity, whereas the sodium methoxide is a fairly mild base. The potassium tributoxide is a stronger base, and so we cool it down in order to accommodate the stronger base so that the reaction doesn't generate so much heat. And so this is really about small base versus bulky base. And when we look at the substrate and think about pulling the different protons, what we need to do is consider where the protons are and what can happen in this. So there are protons that are out here, all three the same, and there are two protons out here. So how would we classify HA? What type of protons are HA? Are they primary, secondary, or tertiary? HAs out here are all primary protons. And the HBs, when I look at them, HBs are all secondary. That means that the sterics that are around HB are a little bit greater. So as the sterics around HB are a little bit greater, that means that HB is a little bit harder to get to than is HA. HA is more accessible. So out here, these guys have less sterics. And HB has more sterics. Okay, let's look at the two products that they form when we pull one or the other. So if I take away HA and pull HA, I end up with a product that is the five-membered ring system, the double bond at the top, and the double bond here. That's the product that I get out of that one. And if I pull the other one, HB, the product that I get has the five-membered ring system and the double bond inside the ring system, like that. bond is not going where I want it to go. That's better. Still not happy with that, but I don't know why I can't make a decent five-membered ring system. Okay, so I get two different products that come out of this, both conjugated, but different in their structure. So the question is, when I have two bases, and I have a base which is a bulky base, and I have a small base, and my color coding is not the best choices for this, but this one is small and this one is bulky. So which proton does the bulky base seem like it's going to be able to pull? If the bulky base is big and has a lot of sterics that it carries with it, is it going to be able to get into the location where the secondary protons are and be able to get to those secondary protons where there's more sterics around them? Or is it going to have an easier time getting to the protons that are primary where there are less sterics around it? So we're looking at this guy here. Which proton is that guy going to be able to get to? HA is going to be the easier proton for it to get to because there are less sterics. So this one is going to go for HA. And the small one is going to have an easier time getting in and getting at the HB. So this guy is going to have an easier time getting over here. Now, why am I looking at them in this regards? Well, when we look at the substitution pattern that was created, when I pulled they're both conjugated products, but when I pulled HA is a less stable product. It is really a disubstituted product. And it is less stable than the protons that I pulled that gave me this product that was trisubstituted. So this one is more stable. And thermodynamically, this would be the thermo product. The other one is less stable and is really the kinetic product. And so I'd like to try to form the thermo product if I can. The small base can do that. The bulky base cannot. So when I go up here and I look at these two different products, we can get both, and we should draw both, but one is going to be major for one reaction, and the other major for the other reaction. So we'll just copy these, paste them down here. With the small base, what we find is that the small base can form the thermodynamic product, and that this one becomes major due to the small base. This is the thermodynamic product. And what I would expect is the major product. But when I go to the bulky base, this one becomes major. And this is major due to the bulky base and the preference to pull less sterically hindered proton. And so that one becomes major over there. They're both E2s. So actually, you know, all we're going through the E2 mechanism in terms of this, but it's just the difference between a bulky base versus a small base and which protons are easily acceptable to the bulky base. So with a bulky base, we're always going for the less sterically hindered protons. Bulky base with choice of protons Always go for the less strictly hindered ones. With a small base, you're not always going for the more strictly hindered ones, but you're going for the more substituted double bond. So that's the choice in that regard. What else do we have here? I know where those problems are. They're co-op problems. That's why I'm thinking about them in a different way. Let's go back to here and the nucleophilic co-op, which I should have had you guys doing, and I didn't really think about it. This co-op has some great problems and some great things. And in fact, you know what, not to double things up, but maybe looking at some of these in lecture is gonna be the right place to look at these so that we don't double these up. These problems are really important ones because they look at the problem in terms of relative rates and trying to figure out what's important within the problems. There are some that you need to figure out, SM1, SM2, E1, E2, so there's some more problems that are on here too in terms of the co-op. But these first A, B, C, D, E are relative rate problems, which are great problems. Like just for instance, A, 1-bromobutane or 1-iodobutane with sodium cyanide and dimethyl sulfoxide. So these are bromo and iodo, sodium cyanide, and DMSO. 1, 2, 3, 4, 1-bromobromide and iodide with sodium cyanide. In DMSO. What I love about these products or these reactions is it's a competition. We want to know which reaction is faster. And so we assume that they go by the same mechanism. All of these are going to go by the same mechanism for each of the reactions. So number one, we need to decide the major mechanism before we can decide which reaction is going to go faster. So the process here is decide mechanism, find differences, decide which reaction is faster. Based on differences. And here the magic sheet really helps to some degree. So these are both primary substrates. We have the same nucleophile, same solvent. Everything is the same here. And as I look at this, this is a good nucleophile. DMSO, dimethyl sulfoxide, is a solvent that looks like this. It's aprotic. This aprotic, polar aprotic, is good for SN2 reactions. You've got a primary substrate, a good nucleophile, a polar aprotic solvent. This is an SN2 reaction. So in looking at the SN2 reaction, what are my differences? My differences are here. A bromide versus an iodide. And in terms of rates of reactions, if I go back to the magic sheet, all the way back up here someplace, and we look at an SN2 reaction, and we focus in on SN2 reaction, we say, okay, all of these factors are telling me about the SN2 reaction, and that benzyl equals allele is faster than methyl, is faster than primary, is faster than secondary. Well, we're primary in both of our substrates, so this relative rate is not making any difference for us. The only other place where rate comes in is down here in terms of leaving group, and that what we see is that iodides are faster than bromides. So the iodide leaving group is going to be kicked off easier, faster than a bromide leaving group. And so therein lies our answer to this problem, which one is going to be faster. The faster reaction, it's not that one. It's the one with the iodide. And the answer is better leaving group. And we should also draw the products for these, that as we draw the product, this is the cyanide group, which is coming in and displacing the iodide. And that is true for each one of these. We get the same product for each one. Now, the substrate isn't always the same on all of these reactions and examples that I gave you. And sometimes the solvents change, or sometimes the nucleophile changes, or what have you. But they're great in terms of relative rate problems in focusing on a mechanism, but then also being able to choose which reaction is faster gives you more insight into the reactions themselves. So I like these relative rate sorts of problems. And there's something that that you can expect to see again. Okay, we're 10:34. How are we doing? You guys still with me? Did any sort of questions come up in terms of what we're doing? Are there any problems that maybe Linnea did that you guys have questions about? Or maybe you tried to work on those problems yourself, since that was a sheet that I emailed out, that problems may have come up that you didn't understand or that you wanted me to look at. Or you just want me to just keep going. Or we want to break and we'll pick it up at 11:10. Because we can take a break now, and this is intense. This is a lot of going through and doing problems like this. Yeah, is a break. I think a break's probably a good idea too. I was kind of feeling break. Let's do it that way. Let's take a break and let's reconvene at 11:10, because that'll give us an hour and a half in the morning. That'll give us an hour and a half hour from now. That's 3 hours worth of lecture and 3 hours worth of problems. And a short break in between these is going to do our brains better. We won't check out. And that way we won't be running right into lecture. Let's do it that way. Okay? Cool. Sounds good. So let's take a break. We'll reconvene at 11:10. We'll go into lecture and we'll do some more problems, and we'll do different problems so that things will not all be the same. Okay? So we'll see you in about half an hour. All righty.